Hello, nice to see all y'all here. This is Vivian Kube, I am Hannah Voss, and let's get started. We need to be neutral, even if it hurts sometimes. That's what Julia Klöckner said in a report from Berlin, middle of this year. She was asked about that she forbid the rainbow flag being flown on the parliamentary building. The pressure on NGOs is growing, and there's accusations from the AfD, the German far-right party, that these organizations are not politically neutral enough and need to be more neutral. The AfD, the far-right party, wants to achieve that subsidies are being withheld and that they're not for the working for the common good. So there's a lot of insecurity about what is still allowed and what you cannot do. The same applies also at school. There's a non-representative Quaribian online. One in eight teacher is afraid of negative reactions from far-right circles if they openly talk about democratic values in school. And the accusation is always, allegedly, this is not politically neutral enough. And the means that the far-right party is availing themselves of is parliamentary queries, and taking it to the tax office, and a slew of other complaints, and also, of course, lawsuits. So the question is, do we all need to be neutral, even if it hurts, while other parts of the society can get more far-right and more far-right in peace? That is what we're going to look into today. So, spoiler alert in the beginning, there's no this one obligation of neutrality. And if you look into the German federal basic law, there's neutrality. It's not in there. Historically, you'd think about the neutrality of government in connection with freedom of religion. And looking at political neutrality, which we are going to talk about today, there is some legal obligations in there, but they're very specific. You can see them here on this slide. It's about giving fair chances to all of the parties. There's an obligation of factuality, of moderation. There's being one-sided and indoctrinating people is forbidden. And there's an obligation to political neutrality as pertains to the political parties. And if you see these obligations, you'd think, yeah, there's certainly good reasons for this. But the thing is, how far do these obligations do, and how are these obligations limited? And this is what we're going to look into in administration, government, parliament, school, and civil society. And one more spoiler, we are going to find out that in a lot of these areas, this obligation of neutrality is not as far-reaching as you'd think. Especially, very important, there is no neutrality as pertaining to the core values of the basic law in Germany.
So how could it get so far? How could the principle of neutrality become such a weapon which is being used now against civil society in school and parliament and everywhere? Jonas Deider researched this at the University of Leipzig, and as far as we know, he's one of the first to observe this phenomenon and give it a name, weaponized neutrality. So, well, neutrality as a weapon. So his thesis is, for years, the AfD has been pursuing strategic litigation from the political right with the aim to spreading its own idea of neutrality in public discourse and pushing it through in the courts. So for this, AfD initially brought cases to court that were not difficult to win because for example, one of the most well-known cases is this one. In February 2020, Thomas Kemmerich was elected Minister President of Thuringia in the third round of voting, most likely only because the CDU had voted together with the AfD. And back then, this caused quite a shock in Germany. The then Chancellor Merkel was on a state visit to South Africa, and was asked if she could say something about internal politics by her counterpart. He agreed and left the microphone to her, and she says, this election of Mr. President had broken with the fundamental conviction for the CDU and also for me. This was inexcusable, and that's why the result had to be reversed. It had been a bad day for democracy, and the AfD filed a complaint with the Federal Constitutional Court and wins. They say that these statements violate the equal opportunities of parties under the basic law. What's also interesting, Hannah may explain this a little bit more to you, but for now, this decision was made by a vote of 3-5. If it had been 4-4, the AfD lawsuit would have been dismissed. So it came down to just one vote. It was very close. That's how close it can get when legal history is made. Still, AfD also won other cases of this kind. For example, against the press release by the Minister of Education, Johanna Vanka. She made a press statement against an AfD demonstration that was in, and also here the AfD won against her with the Federal Constitutional Court. Then we have Seehofer, who published an interview on the website of the Ministry of the Interior, and there he said the AfD was subversive and a danger for the state, and also here the AfD filed a lawsuit and won again. Again, a violation of Article 21, the neutrality of towards parties by the state. Why are we telling this to you? Firstly, because it's interesting that the CDU, the Conservative Party, was the first victim of instrumentalization of the principle of neutrality before discovering it for itself. And it's worth going back to the beginning to understand the principle of neutrality, because in these cases where the AfD won, it was always about the public relation, the PR work of those in power, and in this context, the AfD was they had a legal point. But now the requirement of neutrality is being used against anything or anyone who criticizes them in school, civil society, and this has nothing to do with government PR, where it started anymore. And that's why we will look into each sector for now and what the legal situation is there. So in public administration, we want to look at the limits of the principle of neutrality, and for that it's important to look into the constitution. So we have a militant democracy, that's what Karl Löwenstein called it, or Wehrhafte Demokratie in German. Karl Löwenstein, a law professor who had to flee from the Nazis himself, he had the idea of militant democracy, he made it strong. That's the direction of our basic law, and I think the idea is clear of democracy. The main idea behind this is no power for those who want to abolish democracy, and that's why parties can be banned under the basic law, that's why associations can be banned under the basic law, and that's why there is the principle of loyalty to the Constitution for civil servants. You have Section 60 of the Federal Civil Services Act, and in paragraph 1, sentence 1, you have requirement of neutrality, but right next to it, there you can see that civil servants must demonstrate their commitment to the free basic order within the meaning of the basic law through their entire conduct and advocate for its preservation. So these are really, really high demands. Civil servants must actively promote democracy both inside and outside of work. That means just looking while democracy is endangered. That's not what they can do. They would violate their service obligations. We have a quote from the Federal Constitutional Court we found, and the court says the duty of loyalty of civil servants requires more than just a formally correct, otherwise uninterested, cool, inwardly distanced attitude, but rather an active distancing from any extremist endeavors. So that shows pretty well, you can't just shrug your shoulders, but you have to actively work for democracy and to preserve it.
And this is also valid for other employees in the administration, so people employed under a collective bargaining agreement. So now you wonder what's behind this liberal and democratic basic order, especially if you hear things like any extremist action. Maybe you vaguely remember about the radical law from the 70s and the then interpretation of a loyalty to the Constitution that equaled enemy of the Constitution with leftist people, and the Radical Act that meant actually a ban from work for many left-leaning people. So we are going to look into what this liberal democratic basic order means. This thing that we're all going to be actively engaged for. Not this. This is a horseshoe, and this is a symbol for, yeah, maybe if you're superstitious, or maybe for the security administration, but it has nothing to do with the liberal democratic basic order. The police, etc., really like to stick this left and right extremism. It's the same. It's in opposition to the Constitution, but this is not what the Federal Constitutional Court agrees as hostile to the democracy, because the court said in a decision in the 2020s, it said, no, this is not a thing. And these three elements that you see here, dignity of humanity, the democratic principle, and the rule of law, this is the yardstick of what we should strive for. Let's look at human dignity first of all, because this is getting a lot of fire from a lot of sides these days. The human dignity is from Article 1, Sentence 1 of the Basic Law. You see what this means. You see a couple demands and sentences that are being considered violations of basic human dignity by the courts. Anything that makes a distinction of folk Germans and passport Germans, that the biological Germans have a better legal standing than the passport Germans, remigration, so making immigration reversible. This violates basic human dignity principles. And as I said, this means for humans working in the civil service that if they have such demands made on them, that they need to oppose this, both in their private lives and at work. Let's get back to government. Vivian said earlier that there were a couple decisions where the AfD won in court, and at the Constitutional Court you see what preserving equal chances for the parties means. It is violated if somebody in government with governmental power abuses the authority of their office or abuses the means connected to their office in a very specific way to specifically decide in favor or against the party and drum up one or other, the other opinion against them. And Vivian also said that this jurisprudence hasn't remained without criticism. And among the judges in Karlsruhe, there was a special vote, and the criticism aims towards this. Everybody knows that the person sitting there is both chancellor as well as a party politician. So she was voted to further the agenda of her political party. So many people demand that under the umbrella of equal chances to parties, it shouldn't be about using the power of the office, but should be an outlawing of using the resources, like economic resources should not be used to do party politics. And recently, no surprise, there's a lot of lawsuits pending at the federal constitutional courts, among others about things Olaf Scholz and Habeck said, and also former Ministry of Families Lisa Powers. It's really worth to look into that. Maybe something will move in Karlsruhe. Well, one way or another, according to current jurisprudence, it's like this. Giving equal chances to all parties is not without limitations, because there's always a possible justification. It can follow from protecting the liberal democratic basic order. Last year, there was a decision from the Constitutional Court of Rheinland-Palatinate. It was about Malu Dreyer, the former minister president of Rheinland-Palatinate. She had called after some corrective researches about the portal of the Bundesland government. She called for, let's show Nazis they have no place here. And she posted on the official Instagram account that remigration hides what the far-right party really wants to do. It wants to deport and drive out so many people. And the Constitutional Court of Rheinland-Palatinate was very clear. Yeah, this violates the equal chances for all parties thing. But in this case, is it justified? Because it protects the liberal democratic basic order. And then there's another additional thing. We said it. It's about this authority of the office. But it's only it only applies if you're acting as this office. And the Constitutional Court says, yes, even if you post this, if you use this on an official state visit, you can say, hey, I'm saying this as a party politician and not in my office as chancellor. Who did this recently in a racist statement about the Stadtbild, so picture of the city, is our current chancellor Friedrich Merz on a visit in Brandenburg. And yeah, it doesn't seem to jive with the dignity of the office. And he said, yeah, I'm going to talk as a head of the Conservative Party. And this was struck from the official record of his talking as a chancellor. You could also use this loophole to criticize the far-right party, but eh. There's one more decision from the last year. It was the Hamburg Administrative Court about one of the local parliament politicians. Some people know him from this nice picture. The picture on the right says, Andy, you are such a dick. In this case, it was about a very... about a statement of his. He said, yeah, relativizing Holocaust is one basic principle of my far-right party. And the court said, yeah, he was allowed to say this because he said it in parliament. And the court said, yeah, in parliament, it's an order, a place of debate. And there's no obligation for neutrality, especially for members of the government. There's a lot in flux here, and it's never without limitations, not even for the government.
So, how is it elsewhere in parliament? Well, Julia Klöckner, the speaker of the parliament, made some headlines in the last year. One time she asked a left-wing member of parliament to leave the room because she had a t-shirt saying Palestine. Then she banned laptop stickers for MPs. Here you can see one she used to have herself. And it's quite interesting that all of this was discussed under the label of neutrality. But this has absolutely nothing to do with the principle of neutrality. It's about a strict idea of the Bundestag's internal rules other than her predecessors did. So here's what you can see, different internal rules of the parliament, the Bundestag, which could apply here, and it's always about the order or dignity of the parliament, and dignity is a very unclear term where different people can understand very different things. And it's always a question of the current situation, what you can consider to be dignity right now. In any case, at the right, you can see a story shared by Klöckner, where the headline is Merz is giving pressure to Dunja Hayali, a TV moderator. And if you consider that, she said, well, we have to be neutral also. If it hurts, well, neutrality looks differently than passing on such a story as Speaker of the Parliament. To sum it up, all of this has nothing to do with the principle of neutrality. The plenary session of the Parliament is absolutely not a neutral place, but a place for political discussion. So let's get to the area of school. And there, you can, it's an area where this strategy of intimidation of AfD is especially brutal and has been running for quite some time. The AfD started a website called Neutral School, where students were asked to report teachers who said something bad about the AfD in classes, and they were told this wasn't neutral. Then a data protection officer of a German state and other courts said, well, no, that's a GDPR violation, you can't do that. But now the websites have showed up again with some simple changes. There is now an email address instead of a reporting function directly on the site. In any case, that's a huge problem. As we said in the beginning, it leads to a lot of insecurities for teachers. So to take a look at the legal rules, while we don't have the time to go into detail, but what's important you should keep in mind, especially in the area of school, there is the law does not want a neutral education, but values-orientated school. And there are different legal areas and laws playing together. There's the civil servants law, there is the school law. Students, parents, but also teachers have basic rights, such as freedom of speech. All of this was summed up in the so-called consensus of Beutelsbach. And there it says you shouldn't overwhelm students with your own opinion as a teacher. There is a principle of controversy, so anything that's being discussed controversially in science or politics must also be discussed as being controversial in classes. And students should be made able to have their own opinions and made their own opinions. We have an example from the state constitution of Brandenburg, where it's made really clear that it's about spreading the values of our constitution in school. So what does this mean? What would be difficult if a teacher says, I'm voting for the Green Party and you all should do that because the party is so great. At the same time, it would be difficult to say, don't vote for the AfD. But what's possible and what teachers should do is talking fact-basedly about the topics, for example, taking a look into the party's programs, making clear, hey, well, that's racist, that's a violation of our basic law, and so on. If students make right-wing extremist statements in class, then teachers are obligated to confront them, to react to that, and to work against this. So what you can also always have as a topic in class are court rulings or statements of the secret services about certain parties. So we have some court rulings here from the Berlin Administrative Court, which ruled that it's allowed to have a progress plight flag in on a schoolyard. They say the principle of neutrality does not require not showing political symbols in schools. It's not indoctrination to put up this flag, but it's allowed, and also within the constitutional values to show a symbol of protection for people affected by discrimination. That's basically the values which we have in the basic law and the state constitutions. So to get back to Julia Klöckner from the beginning, the same applies for the administration of the parliament. So she is allowed to wave this flag on the Christopher Street Day. She doesn't have to, but she's allowed to. And saying that she is legally not allowed to show the flag at the parliament, that's simply wrong in our opinion.
One more good decision, one from Hannover from 2023. It was about a piece of theater by students that was critical of the AfD. And the judgment was very brief. It's part of the freedom of expression of these students. This is not about political indoctrination or it being influenced. The AfD needs just to take it, because it was about subjects that the AfD themselves promote. So they are going to have to deal with artistic mediation and criticism. Now, a case that is very, very recent. It's not a court case, but it affects the head of a school in Brandenburg, who forbid a pupil to be active in to do an internship at the AfD, and he said, yeah, well, the party is definitely a right-wing extremist party, and this is cannot be reconciled with the values of the school if a student of ours does an internship there. And he got support from the supervisory board and the Ministry of Education. And yeah, this is absolutely legally obvious how he acted, but there's also been a gigantic shitstorm around it, up to very explicit threats against his person it is very important that he had support from so many sides, and this has been the case, but yeah, you also have to say this in a law talk. Yeah, the actual support is really, really great and really important. If that isn't there, it's just no good. Yeah, well, but legally, I'm in the clear. Yeah, but that doesn't help in the face of reality. So now let's get to the civil society. Maybe you remember, beginning of this year, in February of 2025, there was a query from the conservative parties. It was against a slew of civic organizations. The 501 questions, there were many organizations listed in this query to the government. Greenpeace, Grandmas Against Right Corrective, Network Research, a lot of very well-known organizations. We from Ask the Government were a bit disappointed to not be included on that list. Anyway, all these organizations were accused of a lack of neutrality because it was about the context of the protests that were happening at the time against the Conservative Party, because they were calling for harder measures against immigration, were calling for deputation together with the far-right party. So protests were called for, and the Conservative Party took this as grounds for a query and used a lot of rhetoric that had mostly been heard from the right-wing party, mostly from the AfD. And you can see here marked out, it's about a shadow structure of the NGOs, of a deep state. A very conservative newspaper is being quoted, the Welt. Yeah, this was a very, very low point of these conservative parties. The government, the then government, dealt very well with this and pointed out the state of the law, because they referred to, according to jurisprudence and our German federal basic law, an alive and a critic and an opinionated civil society is a core element of our democracy. And this is mirrored in all the basic rights, like right to congregation. So the past government referred to all of this. They also could have referred to the fact that on a European level, there's also very clear rules about this, that civic society is allowed to be critical, and the EU Commission has been has said Germany, oh, maybe look more into a democratic civil society. That's the state of the law. It was summed up very nicely in there, but it has been going on since then, and NGOs are coming under fire. It's always been referred to any violation of so-called obligations of neutrality. There were more parliamentary queries from the Conservative Party. There's demands over and over again that they should not be awarded government subsidies if they're critical of the far-right party. The AfD should collect materials from NGOs to use against them at the tax office. So they are they working for the common good, should get subsidies, etc., etc. So is this, has this a legal basis? Yeah, it doesn't. The German youth community gives a great summary of this. There's no state obligation of neutrality for civil society. Yeah, that's kind of self-evident. And as civil society organization, if you get government subsidies, you should not have to take these accusations. You can have this checked in court. Well, there are some rules. If you get government subsidies, you should look into this. There's a lot of gray area, but there's some tips that you should follow.
So there is the what does exist is the so-called party neutrality, which comes from tax law, but this simply means that you can't just support a single party. So you can't just like share only Instagram posts of one certain party or organize assemblies together with one party, for example. But you are allowed to criticize certain parties, also do so strongly. And that works pretty well if that goes together with tax law and your own rules as an association. So in the tax law, you have equality, climate protection, anti-racism, and so on. In the tax law, as a there's something else that's maybe a bit more restrictive. But in any case, you can do political work very, very well like this and work against right-wing extremism very, very well like this, and also criticize AfD, criticize CDU, CSU, considering that these parties are actually a threat to climate justice, gender equality, and so on. What can we do? How can one resist this if you are in this area between principle of neutrality and obligation to work for the liberal democratic basic order? And that's very important for the coming times if the power situation may shift in the coming year. And that's protesting by simply saying no. As a public official, if I get an instruction and I assume that this instruction is illegal, I have to say so, otherwise I am liable for whatever I do. If an instruction is violating human dignity, as we have said in the beginning, what this is, remigration and so on, then I can never, I will never lose liability for that if I violate human dignity, even if I have remonstrated or protested towards my boss for this. So I brought some examples. We have leaked email of the Foreigners Office in Berlin. This case concerned the planned deportation of people who had taken part in pro-Palestinian protests at the Free University of Berlin. And the Berlin Senate Department of the Interior instructed the State Office for Immigration to revoke the students' resistance in Germany. And the head of the department objected to this. She said this was illegal, and later on the Berlin Administrative Court also ruled like that and stopped all of these expulsions. Or we have this example. That's about the former local staff of the German army in Afghanistan and human rights defenders who had a confirmation of admission into Germany. That's what we had a talk of Kabul Luftbrücke two days ago. Now the federal government is refusing to let these people in and subjects them to dangers of torture and death. And even the administrative courts already have ruled these people have to be admitted into Germany. The federal government, the Ministry of Interior is trying to get out of this. And they are trying to take back these confirmations of admissions. But by now there are only very little staff members who are signing these documents because many others fear of legal liability for themselves. And we have this example also at the administrative court. People being pushed back at the German borders. We unfortunately haven't had demonstrations by the police officers involved, but at Fragtenstadt we have materials for that, and we will be happy if someone finally uses that.
Dann nun ist es aber so, dass sehr viele Menschen.
So, many people in the administrations are not public officials or verbeamtet, but they just have a normal work contract, like most of you. Who of you is work? Yeah, most of you. Who of you has conscience? Also a lot. That's beautiful. You may refuse work for belief reasons. So a short story from the year of 1984. There's very little in the internet about this, probably because it's from the 80s. But my colleague Michael Sommer brought it to my attention. It's about a printer employed at a printing company near Hamburg who did a lot of work for the Ja Publishing House, which is very well known in Hamburg. And he himself is a conscientious objector from military service. He is anti-fascist, member of an anti-fascist association. And at Christmas, an editor wanted him to print a letter to his readers. And he recommends a Christmas gift, which is a few books, recalling the Battle of Moscow in 1941, heroic deeds of the Wehrmacht in the Second World War, and recommending books such as one by the most successful bomber pilot of the Second World War, and book of with pictures of these so-called achievements. And the printing worker says no. He refuses to print literature that glorifies the Wehrmacht, the German Nazi army, He continues to show up for work every day. He sits down next to the printing machine, but he doesn't print. So in the end, he's dismissed. Here you can see the catalogue. He is dismissed. He takes the case to court, loses at the first and second instance, but the Federal Labour Court finally rules in his favour. He was allowed to refuse, and so he makes legal history. As I said, unfortunately, there's very little on this on the internet, but through the historian Herbert Dierks, we found Dieter Schlichtig, and we would like to send him very well, nice greetings. Let's have a round of applause for him. So with this inspiring example, I think we can say goodbye. Here are our tips. So don't fear the principle of neutrality. If you got issues, you can contact us. We work with the Gegenrechtsschutz project of us, the government and Society for Freedom and Basic Rights. If you have any questions, so if you don't have questions right now, you're also very welcome to donate. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so, so much for this great and very important talk. It has been, it's going to be a great aid for people in the future. It's really important that you gave this talk today. I'm really, really glad you did. I have so much respect of you and your work. Lawyers for Ask the Government. It can't get any tougher than that, right? So, yeah, give a big round of applause for Hannah Voss and Vivian Kuhne.